We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 28, Jnana Yoga, verses 24 to 44. Verse 24. Natma vapupa jalam hudasha manang namatram dishinachi sattvam Ahang kichikam shite artasamyam. Material body made of earth is not the true self, nor are the senses their presiding deities or the air of life, nor is the external air, water, or fire, or one's mind. All these are simply matter. Similarly, neither one's intelligence, material consciousness, nor ego, nor the elements of ether or earth, nor the objects of sense perception, nor even the primeval state of material equilibrium can be considered the actual identity of the soul. Om Gyana Chimirandasya Gyananjana Shakaya Chakshunari Chamyena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva. So what do you remember from the last class? Yes, Leela? We shouldn't see good and bad in this material world. Okay. We accept whatever can be engaged in Krishna's service as good and reject whatever cannot be engaged in Krishna's service. Yes, Jagadguru. Criticism and praise is a sign of false ego. Okay? Krishna is the fourth, Tridya. Of the three phases of consciousness, there is a fourth. Yes. Okay, once you cut off the false ego with the sword of knowledge sharpened by service to the spiritual master. Yes. Anything else? Yes. Prajalpa. Mm-hmm. Yes, prajalpa is, if you avoid prajalpa, then you conquer speech. Yes. Right, not criticizing is more important. Okay? Two kinds of dualities. Right. Yeah, first to see good and bad, to see anything separate from Krishna. Two kinds of duality. Yes.
False ego, real.
Okay. So in this first verse, we have a list of what we are not, but not what we are. So we have a huge list here. We're not the body, the senses, presiding demigods, air of life, external air, water, fire, mind, intelligence, material consciousness, ego, ether, earth, sense objects, pradhan. This is not the soul. But it doesn't tell you what is the soul, yes? Yeah, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, yeah. Yes, this is following the process of Gyan. They say it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. So Vishnu says, why we reject the body and other things? The body is not Atma because it comes from the earth, like a pot. The senses, their devatas, prana, intelligence, chitta, and ahankar are not the Atma. Why? They're all supported by food, like the body. Isn't that interesting? Did you know that? Your prana, your intelligence, your chitta and ahankara are supported by food like the body. Air, water, fire, ether, and air, the five gross elements, are not the Atma. Tanmatras and Prakriti are not Atma because they are unconscious like a pot. So he tells why all of these are not the self. 25. For one who has properly realized my personal identity as the Supreme Godhead, what credit is there if his senses, mere products of the material modes, are perfectly concentrated in meditation? So if you're self-realized, God-realized, actually, it's more than self-realized, one who is God-realized, then So what if he's in meditation? And on the other hand, what blame is incurred if his senses happen to become agitated? Indeed, what does it mean to the sun if the clouds come and go? So how to see the pure devotee who has realized his identity? You should not criticize or praise him. You should not, okay, if he's perfectly concentrated in meditation, or if his senses are agitated, you should not see him in a bad way, or in a good way. Purport. The pure devotee of the Lord is considered eternally liberated because he has perfectly understood the Lord's transcendental personality and abode, and is always engaged in serving the Lord's mission within this world. Although superficially such a devotee may appear agitated by events in the material world while engaged in the Lord's mission, this does not change his exalted status as the Lord's eternal servitor, just as the exalted status of the sun is not changed, even when the sun is apparently covered by clouds. So how to see the pure devotee? Satyaraj Prabhu gives us a comment, really nice comment. Krishna feels such love for his intimate servitor, even if such a person is temporarily distracted or otherwise seems to have some other interest, their relationship goes on unimpeded. So this is a relationship between Krishna and his devotee, that even though you may see the devotee might sometimes lose it, still Krishna still loves him and he has his relationship. Their minds are absorbed in the Lord, but their actions are not always easily understandable, so they should not be judged. So it's also how to view Krishna's devotees. Rather, one should view the overall tenor of such a devotee's life. If he's fully dedicated to the Lord and his mission, momentary deviation or inexplicable action should be overlooked in favor of the devotee's greater purpose in life. So we should not judge, but at the same time, lesser devotees should not pursue sense gratification while expecting others to honor them as great servants of the Lord. So don't think, okay, yeah, oh yeah, that's me here. Oh, yes. I can also go and do anything and people will think I'm also... You can quote this verse, see? You should not judge what I'm doing. So should not abuse this. The devotee always thinks himself fallen and will humbly try to do his service to the best of his ability. Still, his actions are between him and the Lord, and others should not attempt to evaluate him in terms of their own condition, responses, or expectations. Okay, some more understanding is coming now about another example. The sky may display the various qualities of air, fire, water, and earth that pass through it, as well as such qualities as heat and cold, which continually come and go with the seasons. Yet the sky is never entangled with any of these qualities. Similarly, Supreme Absolute Truth is never entangled with the contamination of goodness, passion, and ignorance, which cause the material transformations of the false ego. So does this remind you of the guru, of the sky? How the sky is like the background, and all these things are happening inside the sky. Lightning, thunder, hurricanes, but the sky is just not disturbed by it. So many things happen in our life, thunder, lightning, and hurricanes, but we should be like the sky. We should learn the lesson of the sky and not be entangled and not be disturbed. Verse 27, nevertheless, now here's for somebody who's not a pure devotee, until by firmly practicing devotional service to me, one has completely eliminated from his mind all contamination of material passion. One must very carefully avoid associating with the material modes which are produced by my illusory energy. Ritena. So nishta, until you come to nishta, you got to be careful. Don't associate. Doesn't matter... Although it seems it doesn't matter what your senses are doing, still don't associate with the modes. You have to be careful. And to seem like this verse says, dritta, firmly practicing. So it sounds like nishta. Now, Satyaraj says, the open secret of Uddhava Gita. It's easy to rise beyond the modes of material nature and material conditioning, but one must do so by learning the art and science of bhakti yoga. Through this method, all problematic material qualities naturally fall to the wayside, almost incidentally. If one tries to conquer one's conditioned mind or the modes on one's own, however, one is bound to fail. Only by taking shelter of Krishna can you go beyond. So what verse of Bhagavad Gita is that? That you must... Very good. Verse 18. Just as an improperly treated disease recurs and gives repeated distress to the patient, the mind that is not completely purified of its perverted tendencies will remain attached to material things and repeatedly torment the imperfect yogi. So therefore be careful and don't associate until you've got to the level of nishta. Nishta means you've completely eliminated from your mind passion. So that is verse 19 of first canto, second chapter. Tadarajas tamobhava kama lobadayascha. That when the modes of passion and ignorance are pretty much reduced almost to nil, then you are on the level of nishta, devotional service at nishta. So let's see, verse 28, purport. Sarvasangam refers to one's stubborn attachment to material objects of so-called enjoyment, such as children, wife, money, nation, and friends. One who increases his attachment to children, wife, and so on, although supposedly performing devotional service to Lord Krishna, is understood to be either a kuyogi, as described in this verse, or a bewildered neophyte who has failed to properly treat the disease of the heart called material attachment. Very heavy purport. If one has repeated relapses into material attachment, he has failed to eradicate the darkness of ignorance from his heart. So if you ever have relapses, you know you're still in Maya. 29. Sometimes the progress of imperfect transcendentalists is checked by attachment to family members, disciples, or others who are sent by envious demigods for that purpose. But on the strength of their accumulated advancement, such imperfect transcendentalists will resume their practice of yoga in the next life. They will never again be trapped in the network of fruitive work. So what this is saying is that you might fall down in this life because of attachment, or demigods come and make you fall down. But because whatever you have, advancement you've done, then you will resume in your next life and you won't be trapped again. So, purport. Sometimes sannyasis and other spiritual teachers are bewildered by flattering followers and disciples sent by the demigods to embarrass spiritual leaders who are lacking complete spiritual knowledge. Similarly, spiritual progress is sometimes checked by attachment to one's bodily relatives. Although an imperfect transcendentalist may fall down from yoga practice in this life, he will resume it in the next life on the strength of his accumulated merit. What verse in Bhagavad Gita? Shikshinam shimatam gehe yoga brasta vijayate. Yes. Okay. The words natu karma tancham indicate a fallen transcendentalist does not have to pass through the lower stages of fruitive activity and gradually be promoted to the practice of yoga. So actually, yes, in the human life, when you first come to the human form of life, then you have to go through so many levels of karma, so many levels of gyan, so many levels of yoga, and finally you become a devotee. Unless you meet a devotee, pure devotee, and then you just come right immediately to this level. So if you have been practicing devotional service sincerely, then you will not have to go through all those stages. You will just pick up. Of course, whatever you do is never lost, according to Bhagavad Gita also. He'll immediately resume his yoga practice at the point at which he left off. Okay. So it's a warning to sannyasis and gurus here. Let's see what else. Oh, there's a verse from Prayers of Personified Vedas, 87th chapter of 10th canto, verse 39. Yadina samutaran tiyataya hriti kama jata dira jigamo satam hriti gata smita kantamani asuchipa yoginam upayatabhya sukham bhagavan anapagatantakad anatirudhapadat bhavata. Members of the renounced order who fail to uproot the last traces of material desire in their hearts remain impure, thus you do not allow them to understand you. Although you are present within their hearts, for them you are like a jewel worn around the neck of a person who has totally forgotten it is there. That goes for everyone. That if we are all devotees, but sometimes we forget the jewel that we're carrying around our neck. Of Krishna consciousness, of Krishna. O Lord, those who practice yoga only for sense gratification must suffer punishment, both in this life and the next, from death, who will not release them, and from you, whose kingdom they cannot reach. So the result of not remembering Krishna is very difficult. But there is hope. In 10.2.33, there are many nice verses in Bhagavatam. So this verse says, O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. And another verse from 1.5.19, a very similar verse. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruitive workers, etc., because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So many of Prabhupada's disciples have left, but if you go and meet them, all of them, meet any one of them, they'll say, well, I can never forget Prabhupada and what he did. And I remember Shyam Sundar, he left for quite a long time, and then somebody, non-devotee, asked him, you know, what about this spiritual master you had? He said, yes, I regret that I could not serve him. I regret that I have gone away from him. And I wish I could be with him again. So he did come back, actually. Sometimes Krishna sends people to remind you that, yes, this is your path, this is your... you're meant to do this Krishna consciousness. Come back. And that was like a Chaitanya Prabhu. He was away for a long time. And and then the last year, Rath Yatra, some devotee met him. He was at the Rath Yatra, and then the devotee said, well, why don't you just come back? And, it'll be okay. Everything will come back to you, your kirtan, your teaching, and... So then Achyutananda said, okay, give me some japa beads. He said, nobody ever asked me before. You're the first person. And that was like 30 years ago. He said, you're the first person.
When did he show up? He finally showed up.
Yeah.
He avoided as long as possible. That was
okay. He avoided. His wife threw him out, I think, is what happened. Anyway, so, yeah. I don't know.
He didn't have a place to stay.
Yeah. Could be. Right. So I guess history repeats itself.
who talked to him?
I can't remember.
That he actually...
Some devotee. Just any... Some... Nobody special, as far as I know.
This was in New York?
New York, Rath Yatra last year.
Oh, my God.
And then
really
I met him in Alachua as a devotee. With Doti and Kirtan.
So he's staying in Alachua?
Mm-hmm. Leading Kirtan. I'm talking about Prabhupada. He has a lot of stories about the early days and about Prabhupada. Yeah. And the same.
He could defeat.
I know.
Those mind bodies in the soul.
Yeah, he was really expert, very quick-witted. Very quick-witted. The only problem, it was like Dharasa Muni, because he was... If you make him angry, watch out. He's ready to explode. Ready to explode. Yeah. So Prabhupada, in his purport of that verse, devotees fall down, but it's not like outsiders. And he says that There, such fallen devotees are given a chance to take birth in a family of highly qualified Brahmins or rich people. But a devotee in such a position is not as fortunate as one who is chastised by the Lord and put into a position seemingly of helplessness. So if anybody has that experience, then you got the special mercy of Krishna. Devotee who becomes helpless by the will of the Lord is more fortunate than those who are born in good families. So any of you who are not born in good families, you can take heart from this. 1519. It's about devotees falling down. Prabhupada says that the fallen devotees born in a good family may forget the lotus feet of the Lord because they are less fortunate. A devotee who is put in a forlorn condition is more fortunate because he swiftly returns to the lotus feet of the Lord, thinking himself helpless all around. And then he talks about the devotees in America. He says that they were meat eaters in abominable condition, but somehow in their last life they had some advancement in Krishna consciousness. Immediately they are taking up. He says those who are joining in this movement, somehow they were supposed to be previously Krishna conscious. And even though they're born in a country with no trace of piety, no trace of Krishna consciousness, no purity, there is no loss. So that was what Prabhupada said about devotees born in the West. And then not only devotees, he said the animals here in this farm, they're not ordinary horse, not ordinary cow, not ordinary dog. They are also devotees from past life who made offense. So he may fall down, but he cannot give up Krishna consciousness. So verse 30, an ordinary person, an ordinary living entity, performs material work and is transformed by the reaction to such work. Thus he is driven by various desires to continue working fruitively up to the very moment of his death. A wise person, however, having experienced his own constitutional bliss, gives up all material desires and does not engage in fruitive work. So how is the person who performs material work transformed by the reaction to such work? What is this transformation? Who can tell me? How is a materialistic person who does fruitive work transformed by the reaction to his work? No. Yes. He becomes detached. Entangled. He becomes entangled, okay. That's one thing that happens. What else is another way he's transformed? Okay, he gets the bij and akuta of sinful reaction. What's another transformation? Yeah?
And become too much frustrated.
He
becomes detached.
Here it says he's driven by various desires to continue working. Doesn't sound like he's detached here. Abhay?
He suffers.
He suffers, okay.
He just prepares for his next life.
Yeah, he's preparing his next life. I would also say he creates many more desires too. One of the reactions is that you get more desires. So that's why he keeps working. It creates more desires. That's one of the reactions of sinful work. Okay. So I'll read a little comment from Satyaraj Prabhu in verse 30. The natural course of events in the material world is that people are attracted to some form of work because of conditioning from previous lives and desires accrued over many births. So he's talking about the reaction. This work further entangles them in a web of material illusion, making them reach their last days wanting more. The intense desire forces them to take birth again, so they eventually may achieve their unfulfilled goals. So one of the reactions is another body. More desires, another body, they keep working until death. Rarely a soul comes along who has a glimpse of reality. Yes. And he or she enlightens others, helping them break free from the vicious cycle of birth and death. So this is really nice. Verse 31, the wise man whose consciousness is fixed in the self does not even notice his own bodily activities. While standing, sitting, walking, lying down, urinating, eating, or performing other bodily functions. He understands the body is acting according to its own nature. What verse in Bhagavad Gita is similar to this verse? Naiva kinchi karomi ti. Yukta mani tatvavit. 5, 8, and 9. Mm-hmm. Very good. And we heard another verse like this. I quoted it here. It's 11:13:36. Just as a drunken man does not notice if he's wearing his coat or shirt, similarly one who is perfect in self-realization, has thus achieved his eternal identity, does not notice whether the temporary body is sitting or standing. I mean, that's quite self-realized, if you don't even know you're sitting. Did you ever feel sometimes that, you know, you're sitting down and then you just forget? I mean, I have that experience sometimes, that I forget where my body is. I think I'm a little detached, not detached in the good sense, but just detached in a bad sense from the body. And sometimes you don't notice. What's an example of not noticing like this, of a pure devotee? Who can give me an example of a devotee not noticing what he's doing? He's so absorbed. Prahlad, very good. Yes? Or even now, yeah. Your Prabhupada, yes, yes. In his travels, he was actually in the airplane. He was very oblivious. That was to what other people were thinking or doing. He just would, you know, break all the rules, whatever they were. Yes. Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami, okay. Rupa Goswami. Well, that was Raghunath?
You didn't mention somebody who was Vaishnava, and he smiled.
Yes?
Raghunath not noticing the tiger?
Hot sun. He didn't notice the hot sun or the tiger. But Radharani noticed. Yeah. And Sanatana Goswami noticed and told him. Yes. So, Prabhupada says, a liberated soul has already... Not Prabhupada, that is the purport of 11:13:36. A liberated soul has already achieved his spiritual body and therefore knows his continued existence does not depend on the material body. Oh yeah, 7:4:38 was about Prahlad. So I'll sing it because it's how he was so attached to Krishna. 4:38. Asina payatan ashnan shayana papibam bruvan nanusan tataitani govinda parirambita. Prahlad Maharaj was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Thus, being always embraced by the Lord, he did not know how his bodily necessities, such as sitting, walking, eating, lying down, drinking, and talking, were being automatically performed. Even talking. Do you ever have anybody talk to you like it seemed like they were an automatic pilot? they weren't really there, they were just talking. Anyway, that's how Prahlad was. The Prabhupada explains, a small child, while being cared for by his mother, does not know how the needs of the body for eating, sleeping, lying down, passing water, and evacuating are being fulfilled. He's simply satisfied to be on the lap of his mother. So that's easy to understand how the infant is not aware. He completely doesn't know, I'm passing. He just passes. He doesn't think about passing. Then by the age of 3, then he's trained. Okay, now if you want to pass, you have to go to the bathroom. And pass there. So by the age of 3, he has to stop being unconscious about that. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj was exactly like a small child being cared for by Govinda. Necessary activities of his body were performed without his knowledge. As a father and mother care for their child, Govinda cared for Prahlad Maharaj, who remained always absorbed in thoughts of Govinda. This is Krishna consciousness. Okay. So Prahlad Maharaj had that consciousness of being completely unconscious of what he was doing, what his body was doing. He did not know. Of course, Prabhupada, we cannot imitate. He was very conscious. Prabhupada was so conscious how he was eating, how he was doing everything. When he was ready to get off the airplane, and he would always make sure he had a garland on, he would go to the... That's the problem. He would go to the bathroom to put his tilak on. As soon as they put the fasten seatbelt sign... That was his signal to go to the bathroom and put tilak on, because it was time for a landing. So, oh, okay, time for landing. I have to go put my tilak on. If we go to the bathroom, put his tilak. Shudkirti was saying that was his signal, the fasten seatbelt sign, time to get out. So, and then he was talking about how sometimes there was a very rough landing and he would have to, you know, help Prabhupada hold on, and it's just like, and the stewardesses always get upset, and then they would talk to Shudkirti, and Shudkirti would just go, what can I do, you know? And then they would give up. Yeah, so this is Prabhupada. And he was very conscious. I mean, he was unconscious in that sense of the airplane, you know, maybe crashing or whatever, and you're supposed to be in your seat in case something happens. He was unconscious about that. But he was conscious about putting his tilak on, you know, so, and his garland and whatever. 32. Although a self-realized soul may sometimes see an impure object or activity, he does not accept it as real. By logically understanding impure sense objects to be based on illusory material duality, the intelligent person sees them to be contrary to and distinct from reality, in the same way that a man awakening from sleep views his fading dream. Okay, again, impure or pure. Yeah, the self-realized soul doesn't see material things. Purport, a sane person can clearly distinguish between a dream experience and his real life. Similarly, a manishi, or intelligent person, can clearly perceive polluted material sense objects to be creations of the Lord's illusory energy and not factual reality. This is the practical test of realized intelligence. Okay, we'll read what Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvatī says for verse 32. While dreaming, one experiences various emotions, but when one awakens, he can understand that such feelings have no basis in reality. So when you're asleep and somebody's chasing you and you're so afraid, then you realize, well, that fear has no basis because it's just a dream. The tiger chasing me is not real. Similarly, do you ever have relief when you wake up from your dream? You had such a bad dream, you think, oh, it's just a dream. Wow, thank God. So, similarly, one who is actually wise understands the objects he experiences while awake and the activities he performs for maintenance of his material body have no basis in ultimate reality, which exists apart from this temporary material manifestation. Do you ever have that experience while you're awake? That, what a relief. It's not reality. That's what we have to realize. Okay, indeed, the pleasures and pains of material existence are simply the result of being in the bodily concept of life, forgetting one's identity as pure spirit soul. For self-realized soul, reality is his engagement in devotional service of the Supreme Lord, which is distinct from daydreams and nightdreams of the conditioned souls. So if you're doing devotional service during the day, you're awake. And if you're doing devotional service in your dream, you're also awake. You're also doing nice seva. So it probably, it counts if it's in your dream because it's Kali Yuga. So anything good you do, it counts. And devotional service in your dream also counts as something good. You do your devotional service. Even if it's in the mind, it counts. So do it in your dream as well. 33. Material nescience, which expands into many varieties by the activities of the modes of nature, is wrongly accepted by the conditioned soul to be identical with the self. But through the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, my dear Uddhava, the same nescience fades away at the time of liberation. The eternal self, on the other hand, is never assumed and never abandoned. If we only knew who that self was. At least they're telling the difference between the soul and the body now. Purport is emphasized here. The eternal self is never assumed or imposed as a material designation, nor is it ever abandoned. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, the soul is eternally the same and does not undergo transformation. The modes of nature, however, create the gross material body and subtle mind as a result of one's previous fruitive activities, and these gross and subtle bodies are imposed upon the soul. Thus, a living entity can neither assume nor reject the soul, which is an eternal fact. Rather, he should give up the gross ignorance and material consciousness by cultivating spiritual knowledge. It's not that we become, or we have a soul. Not that I have a soul. I am the soul. That's what I'm trying to say. Some people think I have a soul. And I'm the body and I have a soul. Let's see. Yes, that's what he says here. Foolish souls think they are a body who has a soul. Or they become a particular entity from life to life. But Krishna wants Uddhava to know he is a soul, not a body that has one. Okay. So we'll go to verse 34. When the sun rises, it destroys the darkness covering men's eyes, but it does not create the objects they then see before them, which in fact were existing all along. You got that? The sun rises, and it destroys the darkness. But just because the sun rises, it doesn't... And now you see, okay, there's the ground, there's the building. But the sun doesn't create the ground and the building. They were already there. So they were just in darkness, and you couldn't see. But when the sun rises, it destroys the darkness of the things that are already there. Similarly, potent and factual realization of me will destroy the darkness covering a person's true consciousness. So when the sun of Krishna rises in your heart, the sun of the holy name, then the darkness of false ego will vanish. What is the verse in Bhagavad Gita that says this? Desham evanukampartam aham agyanajamtama. I mean, it's not sun, but it's the darkness. Fifth chapter, yeah. Gyanena tu tadagyanam yesha nashitam atmana tesham adhitavaj gyanam. Oh yeah, that's with the sun. Prakashyati yat param, something tat param. Yeah, gyanena tu tadagyanam. Yes. Verse 35, the Supreme Lord is self-luminous, unborn and immeasurable. He is pure transcendental consciousness and perceives everything. One without a second. He is realized only after ordinary words cease. Pujalpa. No pujalpa. By him, the power of speech and the life errors are set into motion. So if you don't do pujalpa, you can realize Krishna. Let's see the purport of this verse. Supreme Lord is self-luminous, self-manifested, whereas now we're hearing all the differences between the Lord and us, whereas individual living entity is manifested by him. The Lord is unborn with the living entity because the material designative coverings takes birth in conditioned life. The Lord is immeasurable, being all-pervasive, whereas the living entity is localized. Supreme Lord is Mahanubhuti, totality of consciousness, whereas the living entity is a tiny spark of consciousness. Lord is Sakalanubhuti, omniscient, whereas the living entity is aware only of his own limited experience. Supreme Lord is one, whereas the living entities are innumerable. Considering all these contrasts between the Lord and ourselves, we should not waste time like the foolish material scientists and philosophers who struggle to find the origin of this world by their insignificant mental speculation and word jugglery. Although one may discover some of the gross laws of material nature through material research, there is no hope of achieving the absolute truth by such petty endeavors. Verse 36. Whatever apparent duality is perceived in the self is simply the confusion of the mind. Well, that explains it. We are confused, and that's why we see duality. Indeed, such supposed duality has no basis to rest upon apart from one's own soul. Wow. If you see some duality, it's your mind's confusion. Okay? You got that? Again, the false ego is there in the purport. Mistaken identity. By studying one's false sense of ego, one can analytically understand there is pure ego, which is expressed by the words Aham Brahmasmi, I am pure spirit soul. Okay. So let's see what our friend Satyaraj has to say in his book, Krishna's Other Song. Krishna is addressing various philosophical systems prevalent even in India that attempt to explain the soul as part of the body, or more specifically, the mind. This is not uncommon. Oh, this is interesting. He talks about Western philosophy here. There are those who see the self as a sort of hybrid entity combining body, mind, and something yet more subtle. So some philosophies say the soul means body, mind, and something else, which we don't really know. Around the world, in fact, the soul remains a vague notion explained in various ways. So then he talks about Plato, a Greek philosopher. Platonic idea of the soul views it as having three parts: the mind, logos, the emotions, thymos, and desire, eros. So the Western philosopher, this Western philosopher, sees the soul as having three parts: mind, emotion, and desire. Even if the actual soul's identity or where these components come from is unclear. So they don't really know, but they think it's three parts. Then he quotes about the Jewish tradition. The soul is similar. And he quotes one of the philosophers: the soul is essentially a mental apparatus giving us desire, emotion, and thought. So they think in the same way. Church of the Latter-day Saints believes the living being is a kind of merger between body and soul. So they don't, these Christians, they don't believe so much that the soul and body are different. They don't have that. Although they have the concept of continuing after death, if you're a Christian. Well, no, everybody. Some people go to hell, some people go to heaven. Christians go to heaven. They have an idea of a continuum after this life. Yeah, you do have that. Finally, when modern scientists speak of the soul, they generally refer to it as a poetic synonym for the mind. They think the soul is the mind. Krishna will have none of this. He asserts quite clearly, the living being is solely the soul, not, so to speak, quite divorced from body, mind, or anything material. This knowledge is lacking in the modern world university education. 37. The duality of the five material elements is perceived only in terms of names and forms. Those who say this duality is real are pseudo-scholars vainly proposing fanciful theories without basis in fact. Whew. Yes. Actually, it's all made of it's all Prakriti. We are giving it different names because of the temporary things that we see. Remember that there's a verse in Second Canto that it is the world of names. This is the world. Happiness in the world of names. How can you get happiness in this world of names? So, purport about four lines down. Gross ignorance occurs when the conditioned soul imagines itself to be material or a mixture of matter and spirit. Wow, yes. Some people think they're just this body. But some people think, no, there's a higher self and a lower self. Some Western people also think, oh yeah, no, there's a higher self and a lower self. Some philosophers argue the eternal soul in contact with matter is permanently transformed, and the false ego represents a new and permanent reality of the soul. Whoa. Some people think we're the false ego. Srila Jiva Goswami replies, spirit is the living superior energy of the Lord, whereas matter is inferior unconscious energy of the Lord. And these two energies thus possess opposite qualities as with light and darkness. So what connects spirit and matter? Very good. The hallucination of a mixture of matter and spirit is called illusion. So it's a hallucination that we are matter and spirit together. We are not. We are spirit. Matter is not us. It's something else. It's a dress. It's the covering. This hallucination becomes manifest as false ego, which identifies with a specific material body or mind created by illusion. Okay, so this is... Oh, he says, clearly, those scientists or philosophers who are embedded in gross ignorance cannot be real scientists and philosophers. The simple criterion of spiritual self-awareness unfortunately eliminates a huge percentage of modern so-called scientists and philosophers who bury their foolish noses in the Lord's material energy without any knowledge of or interest in the Lord himself. Okay. Are you convinced yet that you're not the false ego? You're not the mind, not the body, not... you are soul. 38. The physical body of the endeavoring yogi who is not yet mature in his practice... that's us, may sometimes be overcome by various disturbances. Therefore, the following process is recommended. Purport. Of course, in this chapter, it's talking about the Ashtanga Yogi, because the Jnana Yogis and the Ashtanga Yogis have the same, similar philosophical process. They cultivate knowledge, and the yogis at the same time do yoga. Purport. Having described the process of cultivating knowledge, the Lord now gives instructions to the yogi whose body may be disturbed by disease or other impediments. Those inferior yogis who are attached to the body and bodily exercises are often incomplete in their realization, and thus the Lord here offers them some assistance. Ha! So, any of you who are yogis, you can listen. 39. Some of these obstructions may be counteracted by yogic meditation or by sitting postures, practiced together with concentration and controlled breathing, and others may be counteracted by special austerities, mantras, or medicinal herbs. And if you want to find out what are, well, medicinal herbs, you go to the Ayurvedic doctor. Mantras, you go to the astrologer. And austerities, I don't know. No, this is for yogis. This is for yogis. So let's hear what Vishnu Chakravarti and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, they will explain to us what sort of meditation we should do in order to counteract pains in this body. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, practicing yoga and meditating on the sun and the moon, one can get relief from the miseries caused by excessive heat and cold. If you're cold, meditate on the sun. And if you're warm, meditate on the moon. By practicing asanas and pranayama, one can cure gastric ailments. If anybody has stomach problems, like me, asanas and pranayama. By performance of penance, chanting of mantras, and ingestion of medicinal herbs, one can neutralize inauspiciousness caused by planetary positions and the threat of snake bites. Mantra is for snake bite. Herbs. Penance. Also mantra is for planetary positions too. But you can also take medicine and perform penance. So, shall we meditate on the sun and the moon? And do all these things? Let's see what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says. For the removal of obstacles on the path of karma yoga and hatha yoga, various practices have been advised. Such remedial measures are only for those who are not surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if you're surrendered, then don't worry, just depend on Krishna. And if you're not, then here you go. Well, we still take medicine, but I think Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not allow his brahmacharis to see doctors. He said, you just increase your rounds. And if you have some problem, just increase your rounds for the brahmacharis. But we should not imitate. Prabhupada was more merciful. Thank God. Okay. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives, I have a little bit more from Vishnu Chakravarti. By asanas, along with meditation on air, one can counteract sickness arising from vata. So if you have a vata disturbance, you do asanas combined with meditation on vata. Okay, the other one. So then I have some quotes from 7th canto, 15th chapter, how to counteract the threefold miseries. Well, it starts with verse 22. The actual verse is verse 24, but I started with a few more verses. By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. By giving up envy, one should conquer anger. So if you have a problem with anger, give up envy. By discussing disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. So you'll be free from fear if you discuss the truth.
Where is this from?
7:15:22. And 23 says, by discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy. So envy is there twice. So then the verse for threefold miseries. Kripaya bhutajam dukam daivam jayat samatina atmajam yogavirena nijam satvanishevaya. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. So adibhautik, for good behavior and freedom from envy. By meditation and trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. So if you got problems with rain and cold and all that, meditation. That's again. By practicing Hatha Yoga, Pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. So yoga helps with disease of your body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. So if you want to conquer sleep, eat in the mode of goodness. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada says a little bit more. He explains about the threefold miseries. Now, comparing why good behavior and freedom from envy. Comparing one's own suffering to the suffering of others, one should be kind to all living entities. Okay? So how to counteract, Prabhupada tells us how to counteract adibhautik, be kind. How to counteract adidaivik. Prabhupada says one cannot avoid the sufferings inflicted by providence. He says nothing you can do, but there's one thing you can do. Therefore, when the suffering comes, one should fully absorb oneself in chanting Hare Krishna mantra. So if it's too hot, too cold, the demigods, then just chant Hare Krishna. That's Prabhupada's solution. One can avoid sufferings from the body and mind by practicing mystic Hatha Yoga. He agrees there about yoga. Yes, so we some of us do that just to keep the body from deteriorating even more. Verse 40, these inauspicious disturbances can be gradually removed by constant remembrance of me. So here we have for the spiritual people. The last verse was for the yogis and karmis. So if you're not so spiritual, you'll have to do all these other things. Now, if you're really spiritual, 40, these inauspicious disturbances can be gradually removed by constant remembrance of me, by congregational hearing and chanting of my holy names, or by following in the footsteps of the great masters of yoga. So this is the remedy for devotees. Chant Hare, just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, you got a problem? Increase your chanting. Purport. According to Srila Srila Swami, by meditation on the Supreme Lord, one can overcome lust and other mental disturbances. By following in the footsteps of great transcendentalists, one can overcome hypocrisy, false pride, and other types of mental imbalance. Okay, so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has a comment. By engaging in the practice of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, beginning with hearing and chanting the Lord's holy names and meditating upon his transcendental pastimes, all inauspiciousness within the heart, which are impediments to one's advancement, will gradually diminish. So he recommends only the chanting. Now, I have a quote here from Brahmachari in Krishna Consciousness, how to overcome lust. And he quotes this verse. And he says, sex desire, he quotes Sridhar Swami, actually, how to overcome lust. And then he quotes Bhagavatam 3:28-32. Sex desire can be overcome by meditation on Krishna's eyebrows. This can be very effective. We can meditate on the deity we are serving or in pictures of Krishna. Krishna will help us. Srila Prabhupada also recommended deity worship for those who are very troubled by lusty desires. We may think ourselves too impure to go anywhere near the deities, but this process is prescribed because if one is at all principled, when he comes in the presence of the deities, he must force his mind to stop thinking of sex. And gradually, by performing this intimate service, a conscientious devotee will become so attracted to Krishna that all lower desires will become insignificant. So this is Bhaktivikasa Swami. Verse 41. By various methods, some yogis free the body from disease and old age and keep it perpetually youthful. Thus, they engage in yoga for the purpose of achieving material mystic perfections. Purport. Process described here is meant to fulfill one's material desires, not to bring one transcendental knowledge. Therefore, this process cannot be accepted as devotional service to the Lord, according to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Despite all such mystic perfections, the material body will ultimately die. Actual eternal youth and happiness are available only on the spiritual platform of Krishna consciousness. Did somebody tell me in this class about the 700-year-old person at Kumbh Mela that met Prabhupada or met the devotees? It was, you didn't tell? Nobody said, mentioned it. Somewhere I just read that recently. There was a 700-year-old guru who was like up in a tree or something. I don't know, maybe. And he came down just to glorify. He would never come down, but he came to glorify Prabhupada. He came down just to glorify Srila Prabhupada. And he brought a few of his disciples, 300 or 400-year-old, with him down. And he just came to glorify what Prabhupada did in spreading Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he wouldn't come down. And some devotees came to meet him. And Deva, what's his name?
Deva.
Yeah, Deva Raha.
Oh. That's what you should
do. Oh, wow. He gave him Bhagavad Gita as it is. Wow. And he's been living since time of Lord Chaitanya, right? Almost. Yeah. He's there since Lord Chaitanya's time. Yeah. You want to meet him, Russ?
No. He's only 1,400 years old.
Okay, well, maybe. Okay. Yeah. He was at one Kumbh Mela, but I don't know if he goes to all of them. There was one big one, 144 years or something. I don't know which. Does he come to all of them? Or? Oh, he left now. Oh, okay. He's no longer here.
I think in
89 he was there.
Yeah.
Oh, over there. Is that his? Oh. I didn't know that. That flying saucer. Yeah, we swim there. Yeah, it's a good place for bathing. Okay, there we go. So even the 700-year-old had to leave his body. But some of his disciples might still be there. I don't know. Okay, verse 42. This mystic bodily perfection is not valued very highly by those expert in transcendental knowledge. Indeed, they consider endeavor for such perfection useless, since the soul, like a tree, is permanent, but the body, like a tree's fruit, is subject to destruction. Purport. The example given here is of a tree that seasonally bears fruit. The fruit exists for a very short time, whereas the tree may exist for thousands of years. Similarly, the spirit soul is eternal, whereas the material body, even when preserved as long as possible, is destroyed relatively quickly. The body should never be equated with the eternally existing spirit soul. Those who are actually intelligent, who actually have spiritual knowledge, are not interested in material mystic perfections. So let's see what Shri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says. Purport. A tree produces seasonal fruit, but even after the fruit is gone, the tree remains for a very long time. Self-realized souls, knowing perfectly well the gross and subtle bodies, which are temporary manifestations of material nature, are perishable, do not undergo the severe penance required to obtain mystic powers. So if you want mystic powers, don't worry. Don't do it. It's not recommended. So really, by the end of this class, you should really, even birth after birth, you should be detached of the body you have right now. Okay, Satyaraj. The essence of Jnana Yoga, the theme of this chapter. Actual knowledge allows one to understand that spiritual pursuit is not about acquiring power, but about using one's knowledge, heart, and action for the Supreme. So it's not mystic yoga, but it's bhakti that we're after. That is the goal. And here we see in the next verse. Although the physical body may be improved by various processes of yoga, an intelligent person who has dedicated his life to me does not place his faith in the prospect of perfecting his physical body through yoga. And in fact, he gives up such procedures. How many of you practiced yoga before And then when you just joined, you gave it up. I know a lot of Satchinandan Swami and Srimati and many people. She was very serious. They were very serious yoga practitioners who gave it up when they joined devotional service. But then later on, they start taking again because the body is sick. And so if you're dedicated to Krishna, you don't have to worry about perfecting. Purport, a devotee of the Lord keeps his body fit by eating nourishing Krishna prasadam, maintaining a clean and regulated life free from the unnecessary anxiety by chanting and dancing before the deity of the Lord. When a devotee is sick, he accepts medical treatment by normal methods, but beyond this, there is no need to absorb one's mind in the physical body in the name of so-called yoga practice. Ultimately, one must accept the destiny that has been ordained by the Lord. Yeah, I read an article in BTG about one Indian man, and he was running 35 miles a week just to keep himself fit because he was under so much stress as an executive of a company. And when he met the devotees, then he gave up all that long distance running, and he just chanting, he could, and dancing, he could keep himself okay. He didn't need to do that, and he did it because of stress. He didn't know what to do with himself. And so it's just the opposite of the officers, to run 35 miles in a week. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, verse 43. Although in the scriptures are recommendations for performance of Hatha Yoga, Raja Yoga, and Pranayama, ultimately it is advised one become freed from all types of material bondage by faithfully worshipping the Supreme Lord in the association of devotees. Devotees of the Lord cannot place their faith in any process for overcoming lust, anger, and so on, other than devotional service to Lord Mukunda. Then he quotes Bhagavatam verse 1636. Sarvam taridam akhyatam yapishtaham tayanaka janmakarma rahasyam me bhavatas chatmatoshanam. O Vyasadev, you are free from all sins. Thus, I have explained my birth and activities for self-realization, as you asked. All this will be conducive for your personal satisfaction also. Verse 44. The yogi who has taken shelter of me. So these last two verses give the conclusion. Remains free from hankering because he experiences the happiness of the soul within. Thus, while executing this process of yoga, he is never defeated by obstacles. So you're always remembering Krishna. You're free from hankering and obstacles. So if you want to be free from obstacles, think of Krishna. And that's the Bhagavad Gita verse for the class tonight, right? Parvati Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto. Prabhupada, according to Sridhar Swami, the Supreme Lord has briefly described to Uddhava the essential wisdom of all the Upanishads, with the conclusion that pure devotional service to the Lord is the real means of ultimate liberation. Haribo. So you don't have to go through all of that. Mind twisting and intelligence twisting. Just do devotional service to Krishna and you'll get the result. In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasizes, although Hatha Yogis and Raja Yogis try to make progress along their prescribed paths, they confront obstacles and often fail to achieve their desired goals. However, one who surrenders to the Supreme Lord will certainly be victorious on her spiritual path back home, back to Godhead. And one last comment by Shabbatisanta Sirsati. He says, although the followers of Hatha Yoga and Raja Yoga make some progress in their respective practices, they generally fail to gain success because they are confronted by numerous obstacles. However, one who surrenders to the Supreme Lord, who is a transcendental Cupid, will certainly come out victorious on his path back home, back to Godhead. So remember in what chapter? I think it was chapter 4. We heard about the obstacles. What are they compared to for a devotee? A ladder. And what is the thing that the problem that the yogis have? They go very high. They cross the ocean. The gyanis and yogis, they might cross the ocean of material existence, but then they drown in small puddles of water, of anger. They drown in tiny puddles of anger. Yes?
Sometimes
This is one problem for the yogis. They get angry. And austerity makes the heart hard, and it makes you become angry very easily by this austerity. So bhakti is the only way. And we'll hear about that tomorrow. A whole chapter on bhakti yoga, finally. After all this gyan, tomorrow we will be in devotional service to Krishna. And we'll hear all the benedictions, the fruits of hearing Uddhava Gita, we'll get tomorrow. So make sure you come and get the fruits, the fall. Okay, any questions or comments on this? Yes.
I don't do that so often.
Yes. Yeah, he was embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because he went into ecstasy, so.
Because he said, yes, chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do is chant Hare Krishna. When the pure devotee forgets his body and goes into trance, then. Remember, that happened in Canto 3 with Uddhava and Vidura. Uddhava went into trance. And but then Vidura just waited, and he came back. He came back. He just went into trance from hearing Vidura's question. That was enough. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada a few times in Atlanta, Georgia also, and in Mayapur. That happened. Okay, any other questions? Or yes. Let's see the purport. 25, I think, yeah? Yeah. No, it's 25. Yeah. It doesn't say not praised. It just says what credit is there. Okay, so he's in meditation. That's normal for him. So, you know, you shouldn't be surprised. If he's meditating, if he's always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then that's not surprising. That's normal for him. That's his normal awareness. So, of course, for us, it's something wonderful. But for a pure devotee, it's natural. And also, in the same way, if he does something that we think is not proper in this world, we should think in the same way. Okay, he's transcendental. Of course, if he's just doing something and he's not transcendental, then you cannot say, this is transcendental. It has happened in our movement, actually. Sometimes they think you're transcendental, but you're not transcendental. Yeah, it just means that it's normal. It doesn't say you shouldn't praise him. It just says, what credit is there if he's in the mode of, if he's perfectly concentrated, because he's already in the spiritual body. So he's in his spiritual awareness. So if he's Krishna conscious, that's not amazing. And one devotee once asked Prabhupada, what happens if I fall into Maya? And Prabhupada says, you don't fall into Maya, you fall into Krishna sometimes. Mm-hmm. Krishna consciousness. It's not so for our condition. It's more sometimes we get Krishna conscious, but for the pure devotee, he's always Krishna conscious. So if somebody praises, oh, you are completely absorbed, yeah, of course he's completely absorbed. That's who he is. That's his nature. But I mean, of course, we as disciples we praise, but yeah, that's my understanding. You have something else on that, Adi Purush? You have someone? No. Understanding on that. Lila Madhuri.
It's like a question.
Yeah. I think each guru is on their side, it's true, I'm sure, that they don't like to hear themselves praised. They would rather you do some practical devotional service. But for our own advancement, it's good to be in the habit of praising. Yeah, it's a good habit to have, not only for your guru, but to other advanced devotees, about other advanced devotees. Yes? Yeah, the real praise, that's right. That's what Prabhupada said too. It's if you're actually fighting for Krishna, then that is real praise. It's not the flowers, but it's the when you actually fight and defeat others and philosophy, and that's the real praise of the guru. And when somebody says, oh, this is a disciple of such and such, what a nice devotee this guru has. Or someone says, oh, this guru's devotees, they're so nice all the time. They're very hospitable, they're very kind, they're very, you know, like that. Then, you know, that's evidence. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. When they came to the airport. That's love. Yeah, he was feeling like, oh, I don't have such attachment as your other devotees, disciples. They come and they cry and they dance at the airport, and I don't have these emotions like they do. Yeah. So the real love is our service. Our service attitude and our service. Service in the mode of goodness. Anything else? If you remember from Kapila Dev, devotional service in the modes. Any other comments or questions? Well, okay, so you... Okay, so your question... Your question is... Why do different people react in different ways when they're... Like the Ivani Brahmin, when he lost everything, he became detached. Whereas we see in this world, people lose everything and they become crazy. So Bhagavad Gita has the answer for that, actually. If anybody knows, there's one chapter in Bhagavad Gita where there's a comparison between two types of people. Chapter 7, you got it. You got the verses? Yes. Chaturvidha Pajante Mam, and the other, Namam Duskritino Mudha. So both people are the same. One person needs money, he goes to Krishna. Whereas the other person, he works hard like an ass. He thinks, by my work, I am getting money, he thinks. And there's one type who is in search of knowledge. There's a scientist. So he's also in search of knowledge. There's all these people going to university. But the difference is one is sukritino and one is duskritino. One is pious and one is impious. So they have different reactions to things that happen to them. If you're pious, you go to Krishna and you say, oh, this is the mercy of the Lord, and I will go to the Lord and he will help me. And if you're impious, you will say, oh, there is no God. That's why this happened to me. This happened to me because God is unjust. If there were a God, then he would not do such a thing to me. They lose their faith, impious people, or they have no faith. You say, see, this is the proof there is no God. See, this is the proof. Who was it that... Oh, somebody was telling me the other day. She was in a class, anatomy class, with some a non-devotee. She was learning some healing or something, and she was in an anatomy class, a devotee. And the teacher was explaining about the body and how it was developing, and she said, wow, yeah, you can see how it's Krishna. You know, without Krishna, how could the devotee develop like this? And the others weren't thinking, oh yeah, it's a bunch of molecules and atoms, and they're coming to, you know, they weren't seeing Krishna at all. She was seeing Krishna in the class. She says, how come they don't see? You know, so this is the pious and an impious. An impious person will say, see, there is no God. See what you think there is God, just see what he does. He's very unjust. To me, he's taking everything away.
Because he said, God didn't fulfill our desire. We were praying to him so much, and nothing happened. They died.
So impious. So Agata, somebody who has some pious credits, he will go to God. Yes.
So Avanti Brahmana, he had pious
credits. Yeah, he had Gyan Sukriti. So therefore he became detached. They don't have Gyan Sukriti, so they just think it's finished. Abhay?
Yeah, those things, because it's the same as Ajamil.
Yeah. By service.
And then Krishna remembers that. And
hearing the holy name, eating prasad, giving something to a devotee. Yes. What?
Satyavadi means gross
devotee. It's what it said. One of the Vishwanath Chakravarti said that. The subtle body needs... Okay, the question is, does a subtle body need gross food or does it need subtle food? I don't know if subtle food will help.
It's just an experience on Prima Ekadashi, and I couldn't think anymore.
Yeah, the mind needs food. The yogi.
Yogis.
Yes. That's the Hatha Yoga process. Yeah, Prabhupada said you could live in Mayapur by living only on air.
Watery part.
Maybe that was Burijan.
And then there is a subtle part.
I don't remember that. I think it was Burijan.
All the food has different parts.
Different levels of food. The mind needs food. So that's why your mind goes crazy if you don't eat. Yeah. And your prana, especially your prana needs food. Intelligence too. It says the intelligence also needs food. Yeah, it needs. Because I know one person who was having a problem with not sleeping at night, and then she understood what to do. She made some burnt chapati, and like charcoal almost, and that made her go to sleep. If you have sleeping problem, you can try it. Try anything. Which yogis? Dhruva Maharaj? Dhruva Maharaj, that was in Satya Yuga. Yeah, but that's not advice from the Bhagavatam.
No, it's not advice. Advice was later. It was imperfect.
I don't remember. Bring the purport, because I don't remember.
The rich food to the household.
Yeah, that was in the purport.
Sannyasi should eat very simple and very little.
That was in the purport, but not that you should eat once a day and very little.
No, prasadam.
Anybody else have a comment? Yeah. No, we cannot imitate. I have a friend in Denmark who just eats only one orange a day, and her husband, her ex-husband, was eating peanuts only. It was a good match. And she hasn't passed stool since like 30 years or something. I won't tell any names. She's a devotee. Nice devotee. Okay. Okay. Anyway, whatever. Let's stop now before we get too wild. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.